From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made at 11 a.m. Eastern this morning. Senator Elizabeth Warren announcing she is ending her presidential campaign after failing to win a single state in the first 18 contests. It was a shocking result for the woman who was a frontrunner until late in the fall. That essentially leaves the Democratic process as a two-man race. Senator Bernie Sanders and former Vice President Joe Biden. Former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg dropped out this week after spending $500 million to gain a small percentage of votes on Super Tuesday. This hour, we examine two important questions for Democrats. First, can there be unity eventually? And the second question is a way of understanding how Democrats view their goals this year. How good was the Obama presidency? Is it worth returning to that standard, or did it fall short? Joe Biden believes the country is ready to return to the Obama-Biden days, as he calls it. Bernie Sanders believes the country wants more than they gained during those 8 years. Our guest this hour, well, initially, we had booked a Bloomberg campaign office, folks from the Biden campaign, the Warren campaign, the Sanders campaign. Things have changed a lot. A delegate for Bernie Sanders is Mary Lupien, a member of Rochester City Council, and she's with us in studio. Hi, welcome back to the program.
Good to be back.
Marvin Stefferson is a delegate for Senator Elizabeth Warren, who was still in the race until 2 hours ago, and you're still here. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
On the line with us is Devin McAndrew Griner, who's a Joe Biden supporter. He was with us on the program the first time we talked in depth about the Biden candidacy. I admitted it was hard to find ardent Biden supporters. Devin put his hand up, and now he's gloating a little bit, I think. Are you? Are you gloating?
No. Not at all. I'm very pleased. I think we'll look back at South Carolina and say that's when we saved American democracy, but I'm not gloating whatsoever.
But you got to help me understand this, Devin, because you said that in 2016 you were with Sanders.
Yes.
And that you share a lot of the goals that Bernie Sanders has.
Yes, also correct.
Okay. So why is it saving democracy to go away from Bernie Sanders now?
I think that in a time when we're more polarized than we ever have been, the answer to a lot of our problems as a country are not going to be found in a candidate who believes his personal ideology can answer all of the big questions of the day. I don't think that we can go from the chaos of a anti-establishment Trump administration to just more chaos on the other side of an anti-establishment Sanders administration. And I mean that both in terms of an electoral sense. I don't think that people are going to make the jump. And, you know, I think we've already started to see that. We can talk about that later. But I also don't think that even if he were to win, that it would be a good thing for his goals, our goals, in the long run. I think it would mobilize Republicans to tear it down, as opposed to the Obama-Biden model, which is fundamentally building consensus. If there's a good idea, like giving everyone health care, sometimes it takes consensus building. And to build consensus, unfortunately, you can't wave a magic wand and force everyone to think exactly the way that you do. You have to be a little bit more sophisticated in your thinking, and that involves changing hearts and minds.
Well, I got to push you a little bit on that. That's my job before I turn to our guests in studio. When you talk about getting everyone health care, in quotes, first of all, the ACA did not do that. And for 45% of Americans on private insurance, they're on high deductible plans. There's been frustration with the system. A lot of people are not thrilled with their health care right now. Joe Biden is talking about sort of vaguely making it better as opposed to something entirely different. Are you comfortable with keeping the system mostly the same?
I don't view it that way. I mean, I think if you ask the people whose lives were saved by Obamacare, if they preferred Sanders' words of purity, saying the right things, or Joe Biden and Barack Obama's actions that saved their lives, I think they would tell you that they preferred something that actually got done. You know, as Biden has said recently, results over revolution.
Okay. Mary Lupien, as a delegate for Bernie Sanders, first of all, I will say I think there's been a sort of a strange vibe in the last two mornings, as if some people are responding to this like it's over. I mean, it is not over. And I think the media would do well not to treat this like it's over. And that's not me picking a side, not at all. But I want to ask you how you're feeling about the state of the race right now.
Well, I want to answer that, but I also want to, you know, address some of the things
I want to give you plenty of time to do that as well.
Yeah.
And Marv as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, in terms of saving the democracy that we, you know, questionably have right now, and, you know, the comment about results over revolution, I don't see anything short of revolution saving the human race right now. We do not have time for incrementalism. We have...
On what issues?
On climate change, on healthcare, on economic inequality. We are in a time where money is being concentrated at the top like it has never been before. And if we don't have dramatic changes, I fear for the world that my kids are going to live in, both economically and in terms of climate. We need bold action, and I don't see Biden as the person to provide that bold action. You know, I understand, you know, and I'm sure Bernie understands this. Like, he's not walking into an administration, you know, with Congress, I mean, that's going to give a green light to his programs. He's going to have to work with them. He can't steamroll over them, but there's a lot that he can do on his own. And in terms of, you know, people not going over to his side, being, you know, looking at it as an opposite from Trump, there's a lot of similarities in the message. Please, I do not mean that to say that they are similar candidates, but the same people that voted for Trump would have voted for Bernie last time, because he's representing a new way of doing things. We are tired. We are sick and tired of the way that things have been done. It has not worked for the majority of us. And he is talking about change, and he has integrity. And, you know, informally, I will admit that this is anecdotal. You know, I worked at a soup kitchen. We had a lot of very white, old Catholic volunteers, and I polled them all because I was, you know, Bernie last time. You know, if it was Trump and Bernie, who would you vote for? They all said Bernie. If it was Trump and Hillary, they all said Trump. And that's what happened. I know that this is a different landscape, but to say that those same voters are on the opposite side of Bernie, I think is not true. That they are, even though policies may be a little different, they're willing to go with something new because it's especially, you know, voters in, you know, West Virginia, in these states that have a white population that's been disaffected, they're willing to take a chance. And I think we're seeing that that Trump's, you know, Trump's America is not providing for all. So I'll say that. And then in terms of the state of the race, I think it's very exciting. Things are changing very quickly. And so, you know, I think we're all holding our breath to see where Senator Warren is going to put her chips. And, you know, this may come down to a brokered convention. I think Bernie's doing very well. He's in a much better position than he was last time around. And we had a lot of hope last time. And so our hope is even more, you know, his list of endorsers, federal, state, local, no elected would touch him last time. There was maybe one in Rochester, and now there's several. We have several congresspeople. Senator Leahy from Vermont has switched over. So I think that there's a lot more hope, and he is on his game, inspiring millions and raising millions and millions from grassroots.
Marvin Stefferson is a delegate for Elizabeth Warren. Not necessarily a surprise after the results of Super Tuesday that the senator dropped out this morning. What do you want her to do next?
You know, I think all roads are going to lead through Elizabeth Warren because of the type of race that she ran. Again, a lot of her platform was similar to that of Bernie. But at the same time, she put out a lot of ideas with her platform that Bernie didn't. And so even back in 2016 when I supported Bernie, I see Elizabeth leaning probably more towards Biden because of the type of supporters that he has garnered, especially, like I said last time I was here, South Carolina. Don't sleep on them, because we're seeing a different demographic of voters. All those that are my age or older that came out supporting Biden, but also their children and their, you know, grandchildren now who are getting to that age of being able to vote, they're coming out and standing and saying, hey, look, we're going to support Biden because of our ancestors. And I think Elizabeth has a lot more together with Biden than she will with Bernie, considering the type of relationship they had during the campaign.
So let me ask you, Marv, as a delegate, as an African-American, as someone who wanted to see a progressive candidate,
yes.
You supported Sanders 4 years ago, Warren this time around. I want you to respond to what I'm reading from Brittany Cooper, who is the author of Eloquent Rage. She's a professor in New Jersey, an African-American woman. She was deeply disappointed that Elizabeth Warren didn't win a single state. I want to read in a moment what she says about this. She's been writing that you had three women, Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, who combined to win zero states in a year in which the Democrats claimed to be celebrating the most diverse field they've ever had, to be talking about moving the country away from old models. And she says, here we are, right back, rejected by our own party. And then here's what she has to say about South Carolina, which does seem to have turned this race, at least, you know, sort of pared the field down for Joe Biden. She says she doesn't appreciate the idea that black voters in South Carolina were low-income voters. She said that's a slur. It's not a low-info voter. She said that's a slur and that's not true. She says for those voters in South Carolina who went with Joe Biden overwhelmingly, they're concerned that if they voted for Warren or Sanders, they couldn't trust white voters in the fall to go with them, and that right now the national emergency is Trump. Therefore, they went with a pragmatic, safe choice to deal with the national emergency. But here's what she writes. Quote, I am still processing black voter pragmatism in this moment and trying to do so in ways that respect my deep sense of black folks as people who care about both progress and democracy. I know essentially that our pragmatism shows that we don't trust white folks to be progressive. I get this, but I will say this. Warren is the only candidate that reached out to black women constituencies early and often, took their pushes in correction, and thought substantively about what black women's issues specifically look like. And this black feminist appreciates that about her. Mm. End quote. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that she, one, is not speaking for all people of color.
No, of course not.
But certainly there's a historical perspective that she's coming from. We talk about Martin Luther King, when he gave the letters from Birmingham, he also mentioned about how the moderate America, white America, is not necessarily the best or knows the best thing for black Americans. And oftentimes in these types of venue, you'll see a lot of people who are progressive or moderate who might say they know what's best for the black community without asking the black community. Mm-hmm. So when we had the town hall meetings, a lot of times, you've seen those town hall meetings, except for the one that took place in South Carolina just recently. The candidates come in and speak, but they don't allow the audience to speak. And so they don't get the true undertone of what's happening in their world. And so she's speaking from historical perspective. When I walked running for County Ledge last year, I found some of the same things, you know. A lot of it might be religious based. Some of it's just by socialization, how you were raised and conditioned to see your family construct is the man is the head of the household, the woman is the nurturer and caregiver. And so many of Americans, especially white American, still hold true to that Norman Rockwell type of ideology. And so now we're talking about you got a woman who has a platform that really addresses some of the issues, if not most of the issues, that are currently and have been currently plaguing the black community. Healthcare, criminal justice reform. You're talking about, well, we're looking at heroin has always been in our community, but now it's called opioids, right? And it went from the arrest model to the medical model. She's talking about education. You know, the kids going to school and not being able to afford it. My son just dropped out in his last semester because he can't afford to pay. You know, but my construct of socioeconomics and my wife is too large for us to get the grants necessary. But our public servants' pay is not enough to cover those types of high debt that the colleges are asking for.
So what you're talking about, the issues you're highlighting as a Warren delegate, overlap most similarly with Sanders compared to Biden. Now, that doesn't mean that it's a perfect fit.
Right.
Elizabeth Warren was a capitalist. Bernie Sanders has a strong problem with capitalism. They're not a perfect fit. But why wouldn't Elizabeth Warren, if we're just looking at her policies, side with Bernie Sanders?
Because you have, again, what I call the white ally. You got those allies who look at Biden and see a more conservative and safe approach to handling our political problems, wherein Warren looking at Biden, or looking at rather Bernie, and saying, I don't know if he's going to get those supporters, because they look, or the media has spun such a narrative that he is so far left that they're afraid to go with him. They don't know how far he's going to go. And right now we're in the living in the existence.
So she wants to be on the winning side? Is that what you're saying?
I think she's looking at it from a more reasonable, if I can say, or even logical mathematical equation, saying, you know what, people are going to bet on Biden to get the win as well as be able to still take care of our requests and be open to it.
So she can get in on a winning side and then maybe influence his administration.
I believe that. I think that's it.
Okay, and so let me ask the other two guests. Mary Lupien, how important is Elizabeth Warren's voice right now? And if Bernie Sanders is going to have a chance to win, does he need Elizabeth Warren with him?
I mean, I think he can still win without it.
And, I think we've all seen that predictions should go out the window.
Right, and you know, we thought that last time he ran, we were hoping for Elizabeth Warren's endorsement, and she waited until, you know, until it was settled, and she may wait a while with this one too, if history serves as an
example.
Would
that disappoint you?
I mean, it disappointed me last time because policy wise they're so similar, so it makes sense. But there is a lot more, you know, at stake, and I think people are afraid. People are really afraid. We just
afraid of what?
Afraid of four more years.
Afraid
of
losing.
Afraid of losing. And I understand that. The way that I see the world, I don't see any other candidate but Bernie having a chance at beating Trump. The way that he is able to mobilize his base, Biden can't touch that. Biden cannot touch Ohio, Pennsylvania, you know, these and I grew up in Pennsylvania. I know those people. I went back to knock doors for Bernie, and it was very uncomfortable. You know, growing up in that area, I didn't really realize I wasn't political back then, but it's a little scary. I don't see anyone but Bernie being able to get those people who are disaffected with the system the way that it is. Because Biden, his whole message is same. Let's go back. Let's go back to the good old days. Those days weren't so good for everyone.
We're going to put a pin in that because I want to talk about that in just a moment here. How good were the Obama-Biden years?
Yeah.
Is it worth returning to? But let me get Devin here.
I just want to finish that thought.
Yeah,
you know, I think if Warren endorses Biden, and she might, I think the followers who were with Bernie are going to go with Bernie, and the followers that were more leaning towards Biden are going to go with Biden. So in the end, you know, she may just tell her delegates to vote their heart. We'll see.
Okay. Devin, what do you expect or hope to see from Elizabeth Warren?
I mean, I think Elizabeth Warren should do whatever she thinks is best. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's an incredibly capable, successful politician. She was actually Bernie before Bernie was Bernie. I mean, Bernie didn't really get on the national scene until 2016, whereas when Elizabeth Warren ran for Senate in 2012, she was sort of carrying that progressive mantle. And so when I see a lot of Bernie supporters online call her a snake, call her not a real progressive because they don't do exactly what they want her to do, I think they owe her a little bit. They owe her a little bit more respect, since there wouldn't be a Bernie without Elizabeth Warren. So I think she should do whatever she feels is best. I trust her. I think that Biden's in a good position either way. So yeah, I trust her. Whatever she wants to do.
All right. Before we get some listener feedback, Mary, you started to go there.
Mm-hmm.
How good were? I know Devin will have something to say about this. And Biden's fans say he's not just about going back, but there is definitely a tone in his rallies. His South Carolina speech was about returning to the Obama-Biden Democrat years, about finding that, you know, sort of restoring that sense of decency, of civility, of leadership. So there is a sense that if you were comfortable there, then this is where you want to go. How good were the Obama-Biden years?
You know, I think we all had a lot of hope for some change, but the reality is there wasn't all that much change. You know, the ACA was good for a lot of people, but it wasn't what we were promised. You know, Obama had the most deportations under his administration. We have the drones, you know, the TPP. You know, he was doing a lot of things that I didn't agree with. Is he a million times better than this president? Amen. Is he a respectable human being that I would love to see in the White House right now? Yes. But is he the president to, was that time really what we needed to lead us into the future, given you know, the atmosphere that we're in right now? No. We need bold progressive policies that are bringing everyone to the table, that are lifting us all to an equitable standard. And Biden's not going to do that. You know, by the good old days was when corporations controlled our government, and people who had money could buy their way into influencing policy, and that's not what Bernie is about.
Okay. Marvin Stefferson, how good were the Obama-Biden years?
I'm glad you asked that. You know, honestly, for African-Americans, and again, I don't speak for all of us, you got to look at he's the first one in 44 presidents. Mm-hmm. And he was in there where the houses weren't in his favor. He was almost...
Not the first 2 years, but after that.
Well, exactly. But we're starting out talking about, you know, it makes Obama sound like he was the savior. And you got a culture in America that still exists today. I mean, the institutional, the educational, the criminal justice, these are all the different types of structures that work cohesively together. And you're asking this one person to be able to do things that are going to be all-inclusive automatically. And so I think a lot of what happened under the Obama administration, they laid at Obama's feet as if he was the only one that had anything to do with that. Those drones and other things were being utilized because he was going off of information from his intelligence
community. Well, that is a case where a president's got a lot more to say unilaterally.
Right. He can sign off on it, but still, if he's going off the advice of, like, and you're talking about somebody's 27 years in the military, if you have a commander in chief saying, I think this is the best way to go, and you never served a day in your life in the military, you're going to go off of and trust that, hey, you know what? You know what I want. You know what I need. Is this best for the American people? And they say yes, then you go with it because you own it. And so what happens at the end of the day, they may go out and it's successful. The president looks good. If he goes out and it's bad, the president looks bad. Right now, you got a president who doesn't listen to any of his security people. He doesn't listen to his health community. He's standing on the platform talking about this pandemic, and his surgeon general is at the other end of the platform, don't even get two words, and he's putting the vice president in as the person spearheading this thing.
Listen, I take that point, but one other point before we turn to Devin on this, and then we'll grab your phone calls. You're talking about a number of issues Mary raised. You haven't mentioned income inequality, which didn't get better under the Obama-Biden years. And I'm with you, Marv. I mm-hmm. think the media expects or sort of lays too much blame on one person when there's really complicated forces that move economies. It takes years to see results. I fully understand that. But it's a question of who's benefiting in a society. And do you believe that the Obama-Biden years produced the kind of benefits that are more equitable than previously?
Well, again, where he started out from, we were going into a depression. So for him to have brought it to where it is now, with his administration, I believe that we are in a lot better place than we would have been if anybody else had been there at that time. Is it better? No, it's always can always be better. But certainly what we're looking at is somebody that we hopefully will be able to have a foot in both households and people feel good about their decision in casting that vote. And right now, as much as I support Bernie before and even now, I don't think that he's going to garner that type of support. And so the safe bet is for Biden to get the support of Warren and to move forward to tackle the issues of running against Trump. And that's kind of how I see it playing out.
Devin, how good were the Obama-Biden years?
I mean, they were as good as we've ever had. So, you know, for the only people on the left that disapprove, who, by the way, agree with people on the right, who disapprove of the Obama years, are Bernie Sanders supporters. And when you talk about the level of arrogance and cognitive dissonance that goes into criticizing one of the most effective and successful Democratic presidents in the history of this country, when Bernie Sanders was yelling at a tree in Vermont as an unknown, is just mind-boggling. So were they perfect? Does anyone here really expect any president to be perfect? No, that's a tall order. But were they as good as we've ever had? Yes. And Joe Biden, when he says we're going to restore decency, he doesn't mean take the country back, back in the way that Trump says it. I mean, that's just not true. What he's saying is we need to restore decency in this country. And by the way, when he's elected as the nominee for president of the United States, and when he beats Trump, he will have won with the most progressive platform than a Democrat has ever had going into that office.
Thanks to Bernie.
And when you look to, well, that's, I mean, coming from a Bernie supporter, I mean, you would view the world that way. But when you look at the coalitions that he's winning with now, he's turning the whole speculative argument of Bernie's viability on its head. So never mind that he's winning coalitions of African-American voters, of women, of Trump to Obama to Trump voters, working class whites. Never mind that he's building the coalition. And this goes back to what I said when I was on your show last time, Evan, of it's not about the enthusiasm gap. It's about the scope of the support. So if a Bernie Sanders voter goes into the polls and they, you could rate their enthusiasm of supporting Bernie and it's 15 out of 10, the vote still only counts once. But when you have the scope of support and the coalitions to win, that's what actually gets it done. But he's turning the Bernie viability model on its head, because we were pleaded to believe Bernie when he said, well, I'll just play my magic flute and all these voters will come out of the woodwork. And it's like, maybe, you know, clearly not, like low propensity voters favor him. But he was asking us to believe something that's never happened. So fair enough. Let's see how it plays out. Let me just finish this point.
Okay.
The primaries that have had the highest turnouts have been won by Joe Biden. It's actually Biden who is both the persuasion and the turnout candidate. So not only now are we don't have to believe speculation, we can see the results actually unfold. So it's just nonsense.
Well, Biden is not the turnout candidate. Obama was the turnout candidate. Biden is taking you back to what was, you know, 4 years ago. I mean,
model though of change is, you know, where if you could divide the line between being effectual and being idealistic, I believe Obama was right on that line. He wasn't too idealistic and he wasn't too ineffectual. He did that perfectly. I think that's the model for change that is the most effective. And people want results. They don't want just empty words.
But let me push you on
Biden,
one more point before
Biden,
I before
Biden,
I give it.
Biden too is on that line. Biden too is on that line.
Okay, but Devin, when Mary says he is going to be the most progressive president if he's elected because of people like Bernie Sanders, that's, I don't understand how that's not obviously true. Or you could say people like Elizabeth Warren, people who will push him and make demands of him based on his, because you go back to 1988, he was viewed as sort of a safe centrist. He's not really been a progressive candidate in his life. And if he becomes that, it is because of other forces, isn't it?
Well, look, I mean, I said this when I was on your show last time. Like, I voted for Bernie in 2016. I'm with Biden now. I'm for integration of the left wing. So I don't want a left wing without people like Bernie Sanders. And I don't want a left wing without people like Joe Biden. Bernie Sanders and his followers have a role to play.
But I want to push
is,
you on that.
You can push me after I finish my sentence. Is Bernie the person to be driving the car? Is he the flagship? I don't think so. But is his role to keep Joe Biden honest? Sure. To keep the Democrats centered where they should be? Absolutely. But the question isn't, the question we're talking about, who should win on a national level with the circumstances that we're in right now.
Okay.
And the circumstances call for someone like Joe Biden.
All right, go ahead.
Really long sentence.
Go ahead.
I want to say, you know, you say you want to integrate the left wing and that we have a role to play, but you've been kind of disrespectful in the way that you're wording around Bernie supporters. And it's something I get frustrated about, because a lot of stuff gets put on Bernie supporters' shoulders about being divisive. But you know what? I'm not on here criticizing the people who support the candidates. And to say cognitive dissonance and arrogant, I take offense
to...
Let me finish my sentence now. I'm going to finish my sentence.
Right,
thank you very much. Because there's a lot that you said that I'd like to respond to. Absolutely. Bernie is and Elizabeth Warren are pushing this conversation left, pushing centrist candidates left. And they're responding because it's obvious that that's a populist, that people are responding, and that, you know, the country on a wide level is responding to these policies because we are tired of, you know, paying out the nose for things that really should be a human right, like housing and healthcare. And I've lost my train of thought. Don't get frustrated.
Well, you know,
if go I ahead, Marv.
I was going to say, if I can jump in, and I kind of chime in the same tune with Mary. First, you know, we know Bernie came in as an independent running for the Democratic nomination, but that doesn't mean that he's a bad person. You know, that just means that he's human. And, you know, you said something. Is it Don?
Devin.
Devin. So, Devin, you said some things that struck a chord with me as well. You know, you can't discount the black voter. And you said that as if Biden was doing all this by himself. You see, Biden didn't turn around and get to the point where he is now until South Carolina happened. Okay. And Congressman Clyburn motivated the black voters down there that Biden was going to be the one that's going to champion some of the things that Obama had in his administration that took effect in the black community. And so if you want to, you can be like the other ones and you can sleep on the black voter, but it's a different breed than that of my mother and my father's generation that are out here. They're woke. Mm-hmm. My children are very woke and they understand what's going on in the political climate. And they're going to be the ones that's going to cast that vote. And if you polarize and say that Biden's doing it by himself, they can swing and go over to Bernie. A lot of those young voters are in Bernie's camp because some of the things he's saying resonates with them. So I think that we must be understanding that with the moderate, with the progressive, you have black voters in all of those camps, and they're going to cast a vote for the person that's going to take care of things in their community that have gone to the wayside for too long.
All right, briefly, I'll let Devin respond, right. And then we got to get some listener calls.
Right.
So go ahead, Devin.
So, yeah, in no way was I saying that Biden is doing it by himself or that he's taking it for granted or that anyone's taking it for granted. I was just saying I was reporting on what's happening. I'm reporting on how individuals voted. That's all. So in no way am I saying that.
Well, I appreciate you fixing that because it did come across that way. And I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, Obama was perfect or that Elizabeth Warren was perfect or even Bernie Sanders is perfect. But what we need now is somebody that's going to champion for all of the American people out there to take Donald Trump out of office before he destroys this country.
Right.
Well,
I trust African-American voters. I don't presume to know why they make the decisions that they do or how any group or any person makes the decision that they do. But I trust them.
Let's take our only break, and then we're going to take some of your phone calls as we talk about the path forward now for Democrats now that the race has narrowed to three candidates, Tulsi Gabbard, Joe Biden, and Bernie Sanders. I did that because I had a listener remind me that Tulsi Gabbard is still in the race. And she is.
She has a delegate.
She has one delegate, but she's still in the race, and I'm not laughing. Marvin,
no,
Marv, don't laugh.
I'm laughing with her because I'm a fighter, and I support somebody that stands by their conviction.
So I don't want to be disrespectful is the point. So Tulsi Gabbard, Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, likely this race comes down to Biden and Sanders. Where does the party go with this? Your phone calls after our only break of the hour. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, a documentary coming to the Little Theater called Slay the Dragon explores gerrymandering in the United States, its impact on elections, and on issues like the Flint water crisis, bathroom bills, and more. We talked to one of the directors and someone featured in the film. Then in our second hour, proposed state legislation related to sexual education in schools has led to a debate among different community groups. We'll talk about sex ed in schools Friday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Mary Lupien is here, a member of Rochester City Council and delegate for Senator Bernie Sanders. Marv Stefferson is a delegate for Senator Elizabeth Warren, who formally ended her presidential campaign just about 2.5 hours ago. And on the line with us is Devin McAndrew Greiner, representing Joe Biden supporters with us today. Biden, Sanders, battling for the Democratic nomination. Dan and Webster on the phone next. Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for the conversation so much. I just wanted to push back a little bit on some of the things that Devin said. So regarding Biden's campaign, I just think like if we're down to a one-on-one race, I look at Biden and I see someone who clearly appears to be in cognitive decline. He's got a really abysmal track record over 40 years. There's a ton of stuff to hit him on from the left and from the right. And there's little, if any, enthusiasm around his candidacy. He's tried to run for president multiple times, failed spectacularly each time. South Carolina was the first state he ever won. So I have a hard time seeing any reason for him to come out of retirement to run in the first place in his current state. So I wonder what the real point of his candidacy is. And if it's about returning to the Obama-Biden years, I mean, that administration led directly to Trump's election. So, like, if they effectively serve the American people, then why didn't Obama's wholeheartedly endorse successor win in 2016? He said she was the most qualified candidate to ever run. She was facing a reality TV star with no political experience. And so I have to think if his word meant something to people, like in the Rust Belt, for example, there would have been no reason for his voters to vote Trump or stay home. But that's what a lot of people did, because Obama didn't show that he was, that his allegiance was to us over those 8 years. So I kind of feel like Biden's slogan should basically be Trump 2024. And then one like last quick point, like Biden, yeah, he's won 11 states, which is impressive. It's a lot better than he's ever done. But seven of those states are more or less irrelevant in the general because he has no chance of winning them over Trump. Alabama, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, South Carolina, North Carolina. These are all Republican strongholds. North Carolina, we've only won once in the last 40 years. And that was in 2008. And then in 2012, Romney beat Obama by like six or seven times his Obama's margin of victory over McCain. So I really have a hard time like understanding why anybody should support Joe Biden's candidacy.
All right, Dan, let me kick a couple of those points to Devin. I appreciate the phone call. So, Devin, first of all, I'm somebody who thinks the question of cognitive decline is a fair one. I want to do it fairly. I don't want to assume age is automatically indicative of decline. Well, I mean, we all decline as we age, but people decline at different rates. And I've said it before. I know 100-year-olds who are sharp and could probably handle just about anything, and I know 50-year-olds who might struggle. But when I look at Biden, I think it's a fair question to ask. That's not me maligning him or saying he should be disqualified, but do you think the question is fair, Devin?
Yeah, it's fair. I mean, I said this last time I was on. There's been a lot of bad faith attacks from every which direction on the ideological spectrum leveled at Biden this cycle. I don't think that's one of them. So, yeah, is he the same that he was in 2012? No, probably not. But at the end of the day, that's one check mark in the negative column. And as adults, we look at a cost-benefit analysis and we say to ourselves, okay, is that cost something that outweighs the benefits? And I just don't think that it
is. Okay, and so the other point that Dan is making is this. At the end of 8 years under Obama-Biden, there were enough voters who were so frustrated with politics, the system, economic inequality, that they wanted to break the system. There were a number of Sanders voters who want to break the system in a different way than maybe Trump voters, but there's a real frustration. And Dan's arguing that if we essentially go back to that model, to that path, we go back to a path that just is out of touch with too many people who are hurting too much. What do you say to that, Devin?
Yeah, I mean, there's clearly a need for a lot of people out there to let their voice be heard and who feel they've gotten the short end of the stick, and I think that's largely true. The question, though, the crucial question, is everyone who supports Sanders, for example, or Trump, but everyone who's, you know, an anti-Biden, anti-Obama Democrat, they want to diagnose it in such a way that lays all of this at the feet of one administration. And when you look at the complexity of all the problems that we're dealing with, I don't think that it's a very self-serving diagnosis. So the truth is, no one really knows what it was exactly that caused Trump to win. I suspect, as someone that actually worked for Hillary Clinton after I voted for Bernie, that a big chunk of it, the largest chunk, is at the feet of her and her campaign. That's not a criticism of the Obama administration. Obama wasn't on the ticket.
Yeah.
Hillary was on the ticket.
Yeah.
And who knows what else tipped the scale? I mean, we had Russia, we had Comey. You know, at the end of the day, what separated a Hillary Clinton presidency from a Trump presidency was 70,000 votes over three states. That's nothing. So it wasn't a huge rebuke of the Obama administration.
All right.
Usually a point made by people who are looking to make that point.
All right, Herman and Brighton, got to keep it tight. Herman, go ahead.
Okay, well, everybody needs to realize that we're in an emergency. We cannot afford another term of Trump. It will ruin everything that we all believe in, regardless which of the Democratic candidates we prefer. It won't help to nominate whoever our favorite candidate is if he or she loses to Trump. Now, we're supposed to believe that Bernie can bring in all these new young voters, and that will somehow help to win the election. But first of all, it's never been proven that can work. And what we've seen so far in the primaries, Bernie himself said he was disappointed that there were fewer new young voters that turned out than he had hoped. So how can we rely on the fact that they will turn out in the fall? What we have seen in history is that the Democratic candidates who have won the presidency are people like Obama and Bill Clinton. They showed how a Democrat can win the presidency by winning the independents in the center, because only 26% of Americans identify as progressive. And so my question is, I don't have a crystal ball, and I can't independently estimate, who's going to be able to have the better shot at winning. But what I know is that many of the first-term Democratic representatives who were able to flip previously GOP seats in swing states have expressed great concern that not only that if Bernie is the candidate that he might lose, but that they
down
might,
ballot, yeah, would, down ballot.
And don't they know what they're talking about?
Well, Herman, let me jump in, and I'm going to kick this to Mary Lupien. So there's two points mm-hmm. there. There's turnout in general, and then there's the down ballot stuff. So let's start with the turnout. On Super Tuesday, 14 states voted. Herman's right. The day after, yesterday, Bernie Sanders, to his credit, said he was disappointed with the youth numbers. And we're talking 18 to 29 years old. In almost every state, it was a lower percentage than it was 4 years ago. He said he was surprised and disappointed with that, but they're still working. Herman says he's lost the argument to be a big turnout machine.
I don't know if that's true. Obviously, this is a different landscape, and I think that we are fighting a lot of apathy. Maybe apathy is not the right word, but just depression. It feels like this is unwinnable. It feels like this is just, we're going to get four more years, and why bother? And we've had 4 years of Trump, kind of beating people down and just this outrage overload. So I don't know if that has anything to do with the turnout in young voters. But I know that there's still a ton of enthusiasm, and that Bernie supporters, to the point that Devin made before, that, you only get one vote, doesn't matter how enthusiastic you are. Yes, but how many votes is that one enthusiastic voter going out and getting? And the people that I know that are supporting Bernie are extremely willing to go to Pennsylvania, to go to Ohio, and get those votes. And I don't see that same enthusiasm with Biden. The people were even, just a couple of days ago, really just, being quiet about their support. But what I will say is that in states that went Obama-Trump, that Bernie is polling better than the other candidates. And I will admit that polls, I probably don't hold a lot of water, and, they're not a crystal ball, obviously, with Biden in the first couple of states. But in terms, with a Bernie-Trump matchup, with any Democrat-Trump matchup, we're all coming out. We know the stakes. I don't worry about any Democrat voting for Trump instead of Bernie or Biden. And I will say that for Bernie supporters. And I don't know any Bernie supporter that voted for Trump over Hillary. I'm sure there were some that were. But in terms of getting the independent support and in those counties that went Obama-Trump, the kind of issues that they say are important to them are the kind of issues that Bernie is addressing in a bold way that I don't see Biden getting. So,
okay, but briefly, Herman also says, even let's assume Sanders wins, mm-hmm. he has a negative effect on down ballot candidates, and you can't govern if you don't have coalitions in government.
I don't see how he has a negative effect on down ballot If everyone is coming out for this election, we're talking about the presidential and people that are on the ballot at the same time, right? We're all coming out. I don't see it having a negative effect at all. I don't see the argument there.
All right, be brief, Devin, because we got to get more in, but go ahead.
There has never been a revolutionary candidate to win a national election, whether it was in 1992, 96, 2008, or 2012. And in 2018, I don't believe a single, our revolution candidate flipped a seat. It was all moderate Democrats. And as a Bernie supporter in 2016, I didn't wish for that to be the case, but it was. And we have to go by the data, and we're seeing it now. Virginia last year, I'll finish this up quick, or last cycle had a turnout of 785,000 voters. It's now at, in this cycle, 1.3 million. And Joe Biden won that with a majority of the votes. So I just don't see how that argument isn't, we're seeing it unfold before our eyes.
If Biden's the nominee, this election will test something. I generally think, and this is sort of nebulous, but I think people do need to be motivated by more than just being against something, but being for something. That's where the Sanders passion is. There's no question. I've had a hard time rounding up Biden supporters to come on the show because they're sort of establishment folks. And Devin, it's great talking to you. And there haven't been that many. There is, however, a huge passion among the political left, center left, left left, of beating Trump. And this may be the election that really tests that, of just testing how much you can be motivated by getting something out versus getting something in. We will see. I'm going to get Tom in Rochester on the phone next. Go ahead, Tom.
This may be a crazy idea, but in order to beat Trump, why don't we just all come together, you know, and try to beat him? Because you're arguing and arguing and arguing. I don't see who's going to win.
Come together to beat Trump, Marvin Stefferson. What do you think?
I agree with them. I mean, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter for me who it is. For me, it's a matter of putting this person out here and everybody getting behind that individual. Mm-hmm. So if it's Biden, then I'm blue. If it's Bernie, I'm blue. We know that the sense of urgency is there, that Trump is not good for what it is to be an American. And so I just pray that if Bernie does, for some reason, wake, you know, the young voters up to not only be motivated, but also get out to the polls and vote, let's get behind him. But if it's Biden, then I'm there.
Young people haven't ever really voted besides 2008. I mean, it's really something how consistently unreliable young voters are.
That's agreed.
Yeah, I think we're all going to rally behind whoever wins, no matter who it is.
Yeah.
And the question is, right now, that we have to really be focused on is, who do we think can beat Trump? And for me, that person is Bernie. For other people, that person is Biden. But, you know, and obviously I'm for the issues that Bernie is for, and that's where my heart is. But we're all getting behind the person who we think can beat Trump. I don't see this as an ideological fight where I'm dreaming. I'm a purist. I just want what I want, and I'm not willing to give it up, even if it means getting Trump for 4 years. No, I believe that Bernie can beat Trump. That's why I'm in his corner.
Look, anybody is electable after 2016. I mean, I think it's fair to ask who's more electable, but I mean,
sure.
I don't think we know, is my point. I don't think any one of us actually knows who could or could not, because everything is on its head. Jillian, let me close with this. Jillian says, the dilemma for me, I think Biden is a buffoon but more electable than Sanders, though I agree with 90% of Sanders' platform. My question is, should both candidates announce their choice of VP before the next group of primaries? Both candidates are too old and could die in their first term. Thus, who is the VP will have a greater weight with voters and thus affect the electability. My choice would be Stacey Abrams. Devin, you want to see if Joe Biden announce his VP pick now?
I think if he did, it would probably be Kamala Harris or Stacey Abrams. Who knows what Elizabeth Warren will do. Ted Cruz announced Carly Fiorina back in 2016.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
That's usually seen as sort of a Hail Mary when you're behind, which, by the way, a week ago, that's what everybody was talking about Biden needed to do to get to make a splash and get back in the race. And then And then everything changed. So so he technically may not need to, but Mary Lupien, does that make sense to you? Would you want to see an announcement now from Bernie Sanders on that?
I don't know. I think, you know, you're right. And I think they reserved the right to make that decision and not make it look like a Hail Mary. I see Warren. I wonder if she'll be someone's VP candidate. But I think there's a recognition that whoever, you know, wins the nomination, the VP candidate has to be a woman of color. No question. And Stacey Abrams brings in the Southern representation. I think Warren would be an excellent treasurer secretary. You know, that's her wheelhouse. And I think she would serve amazing in either administration.
Marv, do you want to see an announcement on that now?
I think it would be the wisest thing right now, honestly, because you got everybody kind of holding their breath. So rather than leave them out there in this uncomfortable position, they should do that. They should bring it. And Stacey, I think, mm-hmm. would be awesome.
I have never seen a consensus about someone like I've seen that everyone wants Abrams on the
oh,
ticket.
Yeah.
It's
oh,
really
yeah.
remarkable. And she's going to make a decision on whether she would accept that. We don't know what she would accept.
Yeah.
But she's going to be in a powerful position within her party. I mean, I certainly think like she is viewed as a future standard bearer, or maybe even a present standard bearer. But I want to thank our guests because we're about ready to wrap here.
Oh, I got one more thing to say.
You
got to
squeeze it, Mary Lupien.
This hasn't been brought up, but it relates to Biden's cognitive abilities. You know, his consistent lying about his civil rights record blows my mind. I don't understand how he can consistently lie about it and even admit that he was lying about it in some interviews, not touch it in his autobiography, and it's not being mentioned.
He did recently, Devin, lie about Nelson Mandela, which was a whopper.
It's a heck of a bomb to drop at the end of the conversation.
I know.
It was.
Sorry.
He created a distinction between being detained and arrested, which I think is a fair distinction. I don't know the difference between being arrested.
He was neither.
Okay. All right. Devin's right. That was a surprise,
pool.
Mary Lupien. But I want to thank all of our guests for being here. Devin, as always, thanks for making the time.
Thank you so much.
Mary Lupien, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And our thanks as well to Marv Stefferson. Your candidate dropped out today, but you showed up. Thanks for being here.
I appreciate you, Evan, as always.
Our thanks for the help with Gary Putup helping us out as a volunteer today. Megan Mack, the producer, Rob Braden, the engineer. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.